No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the magnificent Monday edition of The Yard. We'll be headed to Hoover tomorrow. We'll head to Hoover tomorrow, and so we will hopefully win that ball game. So the plan is to bring the gear with us and then have the Wednesday show recorded there at the hotel in Hoover. Depending on game times, you never know when I get back. I may be a little bit wired after the ball game. May go ahead and record Tuesday night. We'll see. I don't want to make any commitments yet because we got to see how the game plays out, because I went over there a few years ago, as you guys recall, and we had 19 innings against LSU that we ultimately won. Right? We did. We won that game. I believe that's still the longest game in SEC tournament history, and your Bulldogs victorious over the LSU Tigers. But all that I understand, I'm going to be in Hoover, and so the show will be coming to you from the road. And, of course, if we lose in Hoover, I'll just head on back, and we'll just be salty together and make our plans to be a road regional number two somewhere else. We're going to talk a little bit about state's hosting opportunities. There are a lot of things that I want to say today, and as I've shared with you guys before, I love all of you, but some of you make my head hurt. Honest to goodness. And here's the thing. There's some things that are not mutually exclusive, right? We can say, you know what, hey, we left some meat on the bone and be disappointed that we weren't maybe a little bit better at times this year. We let some games get away from us. But you know what? That's the case for everybody in the Southeastern Conference. It's like we handpicked these games. If we would have won this one. Guys, do you remember how many we could have lost in SEC play? Right? That's the Southeastern Conference. Every game, for the most part, is nip and tuck. You know, we had an awful experience last year. You know, we got 10-run ruled. We get 7-8 times last year. Got mercy ruled in our own ballpark. Got embarrassed. I mean, come on. Right? But one of the things that's interesting to me, and I had a discussion on social media today, which, you know, it's so interesting. You know, I'm a firm believer in the old expression, the hit dog hollers, right? That just growing up in South Mississippi, it's one of those things, one of those old euphemisms that, you know, life has just kind of shown me is true and correct. And so you go out there and you make a post, and it's so interesting who responds. And they do. They respond. And it's so incredible to me that so many people that insisted and just absolutely demanded to be heard even before the season began, that said, we're going to be terrible this year. It's just going to be more of the same the last couple of years. Lemonis is a dead man walking. There's no way we turn this thing around. And now all of a sudden, those same people are like, we should be a top 8 national seed. Really? Now, I'm supposed to listen to you now? I mean, you've been wrong the whole way through. And it's like, why are we choosing to be unhappy? I mean, it boggles the mind. I know it's not something germane just to the Mississippi State fan base. But why can't we just enjoy the season? You never thought we'd be here. I did. I thought we would be a solid road regional number two. I didn't think that we'd be in the hosting discussion this year. So in many respects, this team has exceeded all of our expectations. All. Of course, we still got the postseason to play. And I know, I mean, we could probably win every game in the SEC tournament and then drop the tournament championship game. We'd still have people upset. I don't want to go there. I don't want to play that long, to be honest with you. That's my feeling. I don't. I'd love to be able to get a couple of wins. Let's get back to the house. You know, maybe you get three. Maybe you get to the semifinals or get knocked out in the semifinals. I don't know. But I know this. We have to win on Tuesday. If we really want to host, we have to win on Tuesday. At a bare minimum. If we do not win against Ole Miss on Tuesday, we are going to be a road regional, barring something absolutely unforeseen. And it's not just about us. There's a lot of teams around us that are kind of similarly situated. They're kind of where we are. We're going to talk about that later in the show. We'll break down the two Missouri games that we haven't covered yet. We'll look around the league. But ask yourself this. Self, did I expect Mississippi State to finish the SEC season as the number five seed in the SEC tournament? Ask yourself that. Did you forecast that in your preview of this team publicly, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, quietly, in your closet, in your bathroom, in your car, whatever? Did you pick this team to be the fifth seed? I'm waiting. I didn't. And so I say that because of the fact that here we are, and I'm happy about this, is we're upset that we're not locked in to host in a year where many of our fans didn't even expect us to have a winning year. And listen, I've dealt with it with people in the media. And I don't just mean on our beat. I'm just mean, you know, nationally. And I won't say who, but let's just say a prominent college baseball writer, you know, hit me up early this year. And it's like, I don't know what to expect from the Bulldogs. And who do you think they're going to hire? And I was like, well, can we play the season before we start the coaching search? Well, I guess, you know. I'm like, dude. I mean, come on. And he's like, well, you know, I mean, he's clearly on the hot seat. Agreed. He is. And he was. But my question at that point becomes, how many times have you come and seen this team play in the fall? Did you make it in? I didn't see you. Did you make it in to see any of our fall scrimmages? Nah. Were you here for the preseason? Nah. And I didn't say it, and I probably should have. And those of you that know me well. One of the greatest accomplishments in my life is knowing when to keep my mouth shut. Some of the greatest accomplishments in my life are things I haven't said. But I began to think to myself, this is a person that expects to be taken seriously. We hadn't done homework. We hadn't been to see the kids play or practice or scrimmage. We hadn't seen anything. But we want to go out there and put our predictions out there, and everybody say, yeah, these guys know what they're doing. And so I share that with you just because I think it's important to understand absolutely nobody expects us to be where we are. And we still have people that are disappointed. Guys, I will share this with you, and this may hurt some feelings, and if it does, you'll learn to live with it. I don't think there is anybody on the planet that has higher expectations of Mississippi State baseball than I do. Now, you may match me. I'm not going to sit here and say it's just me. There are probably thousands like me that expect Mississippi State to set a standard. And, you know, beginning of this year, I thought to myself, and you have to see the big picture. I was like, I can't believe I'm sitting here saying a successful year will just be making a regional. Because those are not the expectations that I grew up with. They're not the expectations that I've had for this program since we built the greatest cathedral in all of college baseball. And I think to myself, you know, our standards should be much higher than that. And I don't just mean hosting. Like, there's some people, we just want to host because we want to throw a dadgum party, right? I'm more concerned about the baseball than I am the social aspect of this, honestly. I want to host a regional because it gives us the easier path to get to Omaha, period. Right? The program always comes ahead of the party. It's true. Nothing's bigger than the M over S. Nothing. Except for the university itself. And so I shared that with you because I believe the Mississippi State that I know and I love, and when you begin to think about the financial commitment that we have made to baseball in the last decade, in many respects, I think we should be Arkansas. And yes, we have the better stadium and we have a better atmosphere more times than not. But my point is, I want those same results. I want to be a team that people fear. And listen, when we left Arkansas, I had a member of the Arkansas administration said, I hope we don't get paired with you guys in a super regional. They don't want anymore. And so I feel like maybe we're taking some steps back there. Now, we are a little bit talent deficient at some spots. You know, we don't have that alpha dog like, you know, that Tanner Allen. You know, Dave Marchand's kind of got some of those same qualities, but he doesn't have the same physical skill. But I want Mississippi State to be the team that everybody, when the schedule comes out, that everybody says, well, that's a series loss. That's what I want. We're not there yet. We used to be. And the farther we get away from the 80s, there's more of a mystique, you know, about that. You know, we kind of have a revisionist history about some of that stuff. You know, I've run the numbers for you before. And it's so interesting. I just happen to have my media guide right here next to me. Right here next to me. I just want to share a couple things, too, because, you know, there are some people that think that we went undefeated in 1985 until we got beat by Miami or got beat by Texas in the College World Series. We won the SEC tournament that year, and we won the SEC regular season championship that year, and got off on a great, great, great winning streak to open the year. And then we open up and lose the series at LSU. It's true. Got things going again, and you may not know this, but we got swept by Auburn that year, at Auburn. This Mississippi State team this year didn't get swept by anybody in a weekend, but the 85 team got swept at Auburn. True. And after we lost to Auburn, we went and played a game in Jackson against Mississippi College, the Choctaws. And we lost that game 7-5. It's true. We went did a little twosome deal with Arkansas, played in Greenville, played in Little Rock. We lost the game in Little Rock and got absolutely shelled in that game 13-1. He said, but Steve, midweek pitching, you know, you mean Clark and Palmeiro and against midweek pitching against Arkansas, couldn't give it one run? If God forbid we had message boards back then. It's true. You may not want to admit it, but it's true. The 1989 team, in many people's respects, they think it's the most talented team we've ever had. Of course, that was in the BESR bat era prior to the BB Corps era. So that group, you know, we dropped two games at Hawaii Hilo. I guess you could say there's no shame in that, but there is. You know, I'm working through this thing too here. We went 2-2 in the SEC tournament. We drop our first game to Auburn, have to fight through the loser's bracket, and we win one game in the SEC tournament, and that's it. And you know, we get bounced on out of there. I believe it was in 1990. Oh, here's a midweek game. We lose to Louisiana Tech, midweek game, and got shelled 14-7. Let me just go back and look at your national championship team from 2021. We got swept by Arkansas. Oh, yeah. And then we lose a series in Missouri. And so I say that because there are no perfect teams. There are no perfect seasons. There's never a season that goes by that you don't have at least a couple losses, and you're like, really? It always happens that way. And so I share that. So let's have a little perspective, right? You remember where we were last year? We were at home. We were finished. We were just trying to get to Hoover. We were kind of like Ole Miss in many respects is this year. And the curse lives, you know. I'll give you your rooting interest a little bit later in the show. But look at Ole Miss. They got a losing record right now, and they have no chance to – the only chance they have to make a regional is to win the SEC tournament. There is zero chance of them making it as an at-large. I have seen some people out there. They're like, what, Ole Miss needs – no. No. They have zero chance unless they win the tournament. You don't realize how many 13 and 7 teams there are in the SEC, and some of them aren't going to get in. It's true. But somehow Ole Miss is going to get in? Give me a break. Not going to happen that way. They're going to have to win the tournament. And so I share all that because we have to have some context from where we are. Is this a great team? No, I don't think so. Is it a really good team? It has been at times. And there's some other times we've done some things that are just downright silly. But the point to understand is there are no perfect teams. You look around our conference right now. Is there a perfect team in this conference? Go to their message boards and you'll find out there'll be at least one segment of fans be like, there's no way we get out of a regional. There's no way we get to Omaha. Everybody, because familiarity breeds contempt, right? Everybody has those concerns. Go to the LSU boards. They're really upset with Jay Johnson. There are people over there thinking, you know what? We don't make it back. We got to consider a coaching change. It's true. You got people over at Auburn, even the great things that Butch Thompson's done with very limited resources for an SEC school. And things kind of catch up with them. Some injuries kind of sideline some pitchers for them. Some guys coming back from injury weren't as good. Your last place team in the league, we'll go fire Butch. One bad year, fire Butch Thompson. Fire him. And so this malcontent type stuff is not unique to us. But I think it's important for us to understand what matters most is what's in front of us, not what's behind us. And I think in many respects that the kids, and I hate to call them kids, but when you get to be my age and I have kids their age, they're kids. When you have so many of these kids that they understood what was at stake this year for Chris Simonis. Everybody knew that Chris was on the hot seat. If he didn't win, he's gone. The kids knew it too. They played with that in mind. And so I believe now it's like, okay, now we've done this. We're fifth in the SEC. We know we're in the NCAA tournament. Whether we host or not is still a matter of discussion. It's still a matter of some data being gathered because we got a week left of games, a week's worth of games left to play before we can know for sure. But I think in many respects that the state has kind of gotten over this hump emotionally. And I think you're going to see a team come out and play with some focus, but also too, probably a little bit of sense of relief that mission accomplished in that respect. The first phase of this journey is now over, and nobody on the roster has ever played in the SEC tournament. Let that sink in for a second. Nobody's played an NCAA regional. So I'm curious how they're going to, how they're going to handle the experience because you don't have veteran guys around, and your coaches and guys like Stone Simmons are going to have to be part of that. But I think it's important for everybody to understand this team has already accomplished more than most of you expected, whether you want to admit it or not. And I don't need you to come offer some mea culpa on social media or on the message board or anything like that. But can we just get behind the team, right? If they've already exceeded your expectations, maybe it's time that you entertain the idea that maybe you were wrong. Like our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. Matter of fact, I plan to have Bulldog Burger Company for dinner tonight. That's a plan. It is. That's always a great plan because you know what you're going to get from Bulldog Burger Company. A lot of guesswork out there sometimes when you, try some other restaurants. The truth of the matter is there is a consistency in the quality of the experience, the atmosphere, and the food, the service, the pricing, everything you need at Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive here in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They will make you and everybody around you better looking. I had somebody send me just this past week, tweeted me a picture, sitting here getting better looking, Steve. Trust the science. It's true. It's true. Get that chocolate shake to go. That's a great palate cleanser after you've had that great restaurant quality hamburger. I'm kind of feeling today, it kind of feels like a Pimentology day. And I'm not even a pimento and cheese guy, but I love the Pimentology. Throw some bacon on there, put a little hair on your chest, make you feel alive, man. It's true. So you need to get your family into Bulldog Burger Company, whether it be in-house or maybe you get it to go. They do a great job of packaging up to-go orders. It's like a next-level deal. You know, sometimes you get a to-go order and you get it home and everything's a mess. Not with these guys. They have taken it to a scientific level. Absolutely amazing to get food to go from Bulldog Burger Company. The place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right. Let's take a look back. Of course, we win game one. We felt, okay. You go into Saturday and it's like, hey, we get a win here. We've won a series against these guys for the first time in a while. We haven't played them a whole lot. But they have been a thorn in our side last few years. Of course, they win that series in Starkville in 21. We go up there in 22. We're feeling pretty good about life, and they get us up there too. Or maybe that was 23. Either way, the reality of it is we have not had a lot of success against them. So I get the fact that some people were kind of, on edge. Because you also knew what this series meant to us. We knew we had to win it. We wanted to sweep it. Durangelo, I thought, was really good. Durangelo ups his record 8-1 in this ballgame. Did you see that coming this year? All right, gets right out of the gate. I thought, you know, a little bit here, pitch count was a concern early. But they had Danny Corona leading off. He, you know, maybe their second best hitter. Had him leading off. Austin's their best kid. But Corona pops up to third on two pitches. Austin strikes out swinging. And then Lovitz really kind of battled here and ran some pitches up, but we get him to fly off to right field. And so that's done. Bottom of first. Chance grounds out to the shortstop. Mershon grounds out to third. You think, okay, we're done here. But no. Jordan doubles to right center. Really hit the ball well in game two of this series. I disagree with the call here, and I'm sure this was DJ. DJ's always green. But with Hunter Hines up there, I want Hunter to face a pitcher in the stretch. Let him have some anxiety. Not to mention, when you're stealing third with Hines at the plate, you give the catcher a clean throwing lane. So DJ takes off and goes. And to me, in live action, I thought it got him. Replay confirms the call. And so the inning's over. And so we run ourselves out of the inning, and of course that gets everybody all riled up. Dadgum base running errors, I see them too, I do. And this is one too, again, I think this is just a player being green, thinking he sees an opportunity, but you don't gain anything here, right? Because if Hunter Hines hits gets a base hit here to the outfield, you're going to score anyway from second, with a rare exception. So, again, discretion's a better part of valor. Bad situation. All right, top of second. Durangelo gets Cerna swinging, gets Garcia looking, and then Hernandez pops up to Hines out in foul territory. So 1-2-3 inning there. Second pitch in the home half of the second is now a souvenir as Hunter Hines hits a Ruthian blast to right. And I know everybody's like, well, that could have happened. The pitching sequence is different. You never know what's going to happen. Then Larry strikes out swinging. Kohler strikes out looking. And what this at-bat infuriated me, and I'm a Logan Kohler fan, okay? Let me get that established. I am a Logan Kohler fan. But we can pull a kid out of the stands to sit there and look at six pitches. We never swing the bat. We get up a 3-0 count, so I get we're taking 3-0. And then maybe we don't get a pitch we want on 3-1, so we don't turn it loose, and then we take a strike three on a full count. That's not a competitive at-bat. That's not competitive baseball, and I expect better of a senior. Joe Powell then lines out to center field. Joe hit the ball well even when he gets out. At top of third, Stevens flies out to short center field, and Amani makes the play there. Culbertson flies out to center, and then Pierre flies out to left field. So the first time through the order, it's nothing doing for Missouri against Gerangelo. My bottom of third, Pulliam strikes out swinging. Long lines out to the pitcher, and I was told the exit velo on that was 23 miles an hour. Yeah, he just got handcuffed. Like, it's just off the handle, and it's just basically pushed it back to the pitcher. Chance isn't hit by the pitch, takes second on a wild pitch, and Rashawn strikes out looking. Kind of a tough weekend for David. We're going to need David to be great here in the postseason. All right, top of four, still one at the ballgame for a couple of at-bats here. Corona then grounds out the second, and then Austin, I told you, who's their best kid, very first pitch. And if you go back and look, just about every one of their home runs, and it may be all of them, was on a first-pitch fastball. And so you got to make an adjustment as a pitch caller there. You do. Lovich is then out first to pitcher. And we ground the first, toss it to Gerangelo on an 0-2 count. Cerna then walks. Garcia singles to center. So got a little something going here, but Gerangelo bears down and gets Hernandez to strike out swinging on three pitches. So it's a 1-1 ball game now as we get to the bottom of four. And State answers right back. Good teams answer when the other team scores. DJ lines out center fielder. Again, hit the ball exceptionally well. Hines works the count for a walk here. And then Amani Larry singles to left. Kohler then singles to the left side. Hines scores, makes it a 2-1 game. And then Joe Powell doing a job here. RBI sack fly to left. And then Larry scores, makes it 3-1. So not a big inning, you know, offensively, but you get the walk, and then you get a couple of hits behind him to make some things happen. Would love to have been able to get a ball in the gap here to really get some separation, but we do tack on a couple runs here. Pulliam then reaches on a fielder's choice. They take the out at third. But it's a 3-1 game, and it felt like even at that early juncture in the game, State was in control. Stevens strikes out swinging. Culbertson strikes out looking. And then Pierre strikes out looking. We always talk about when you score, right, you want to go out and get a clean inning. When they score, you want to go out and score. So, you know, that Missouri's whole thing is here. Let's go chip away, see if we can't get a run here. And then you get a 1-2-3 inning where Gerangelo strikes out the side. That's winning baseball. Bottom of five, State puts this game away basically here in the fifth. Long strikes out looking, and then Bryce Chance, who has suddenly gotten hot again, ran the numbers last week. He was hitting .333 as a leadoff hitter and had a pretty good weekend. Singles back up the middle here, and then Rashawn reaches on a fielding error. It's pretty crazy here. It's basically a ground ball to second. I think the only play is going to be to first, but doesn't work out that way. And now you got runners at second and third, and so you need to kind of do something here, right? DJ comes up and doubles to center field. Rashawn takes third, Chance scores. It's a 4-1 ball game. Hines then pops into the shortstop on a 3-0 count, and he swung at a couple 3-0 pitches, and I think it's just trying to get him going, right? If you get exactly what you want in the spot, go ahead and turn it loose, Big Daddy. So he pops up, and then Larry homers to left. It's a 3-run shot, makes it a 7-1 ball game, and then Kohler grounds out. But at this point, you got to think a 6-run lead with Gerangelo dealing right here ought to be able to get us a couple more innings. You ought to feel pretty good about this game going into books. Top of six, the strikeout streak continues. Corona strikes out swinging. Then Austin pops up to second. Lovich is hit by the pitch. And what's unfortunate, this is on an 0-2 count. Man, you hate that. But we get Cerna to strike out. So, again, a couple more strikeouts here for Gerangelo. And now we're headed to bottom of six. Powell grounds out to the shortstop on a full count. Nolan Stevens' pitch hits for Pulliam. And this is a tough deal, right? He takes back-to-back strikes and then gets called for a violation for not being in the box. And so you strike out there. That can't happen, even for a freshman. That can't happen this late in the year. It's one thing if you're unfamiliar with the college rules, but that's unacceptable. Long then flies out to center field. So a 1-2-3 inning there for your Bulldogs, top of seven. Garcia then homers to left field. And what do you know? Again, it's an 0-0 count, first pitch fastball. That's a home run. Hernandez lines out to short. Stevens grounds out to third. Tried to bunt there. Really nice play by Logan Kohler. And then Culbertson grounds out to the third baseman. So headed to the bottom of seven at 7-2 Mississippi State. Chance grounds out to the second baseman. Rashawn flies out to left. And then Jordan singles again. A good day. He blistered some baseballs. Truly did. And then Hines flies out to left field. One thing I want to say about DJ, too, because, I get to have some conversations with these guys. I can tell you this. Dakota Jordan is trying to kind of figure some things out, even late in the year. You know, he's still trying to find a way to fine-tune some mechanics and things like that. And listen, people are pitching him different as the year has gone along. He may win the Ferris Trophy today. But I say that because sometimes, too, it's like we get so caught up in a couple of ABs in one ballgame, we forget the fact the guy's hitting like 370. Now, he may not have the clutch gene that we need at times, but Dakota Jordan's a great baseball player. He really is. And he's a humble kid that's still trying to figure it out. Does he have a little bit of machismo? You better believe it. But some of our fans really hadn't been fair to him. Like, I see some of these comments on Facebook. Dakota Jordan's overrated. Well, Major League Baseball doesn't think so. Dakota's still forecasted to be a first-round pick. And I think if he doesn't get what he wants, he's got an opportunity to come back. But I think, college baseball is about development. And then the Major League Baseball draft is about projection. Dakota Jordan projects to be a big leaguer, whether you like it or not. Hines then flies out to left. But it's a 7-2 ball game as we get to the eighth. We bring in Brooks Auger. And again, people are like, I don't understand this. If we trot, a down the bullpen guy out there in this must-win game, right? Social media would have exploded. What are we doing? Especially if we give up a couple runs. Oh, we had a chance to put it away. We should have brought in, Tyler Davis, But Auger comes in and gives up a single up the middle on an 0-2 count. And then Corona pops up out the short center. Mershon makes the play. Austin flies out the right center. And great catch there by DJ. And then Lovett singles to center field. She got a little something going with two outs, but we get Cerna to ground out to second baseman. Side retired. Bottom of eight, Amani comes out and says, I got one more in me for senior day. As he homers down the left field line, makes it an 8-2 ball game. Suddenly, red hot, Amani Larry. Kohler then grounds out to second. Powell singles back up the middle. Steven strikes out looking. And then that was the pitch clock strikeout. My apologies. But, so two times there. And again, I understand it's a freshman. We got to put a ball in play here. Long is in hits the ball at shortstop. They force a runner at second. But, some opportunities, some LOBs we probably should have cashed in. But over the course of this ballgame. Top of nine, Garcia flies out to center. They pinch hit for Curry. He walks after a lengthy bat. We got down 3-0 in that count, but Brooks battles back and eventually walks him. Stevenson flies out to right. They bring in Holubowski, who strikes out swinging on three pitches. And that's a ball game. And so Bulldogs win the game, win the series. You're thinking, okay, man, there's no way we can lose on Saturday. We got to find a way to sweep this thing. And I do think in many respects it probably wraps up some things. Not guaranteed. Your hitting heroes, Dakota Jordan, 3-for-4 in the ball game with a run scored and an RBI. Amani Larry, of course, 3-for-4, 3 runs scored, 4 RBI. That dog will hunt. So 6 of your 10 hits both go to Dakota Jordan and Amani Larry. But Bryce Chance also with a 1-for-3 day. Hunter Hines, 1-for-3. Logan Kohler, 1-for-4. Joe Powell, 1-for-3. But, looking through the numbers here for, D'Angelo. 7 innings pitched, 3 hits, 2 runs, both of them solo home runs, 1 walk, 9 Ks, and 1 hit by pitch. Goes 95 pitches. And Brooks Auger comes in, allows 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 1 strikeout, and 2 innings pitched. So not a safe situation. Brooks goes in and does a nice job for us. So Bulldogs take the series, and we say, now we've got the opportunity to go for the sweep. And how sweet would that be? And things got off to a pretty good start. They did. Thought Pico was pretty good too. So we pushed the start time back 2:30 because of a cloud. And then Corona comes out swinging. Lengthy at bat there, but Pico's able to finish him with a swing and miss. Austin then walks. And then we nearly turn two here. Can't get it done, but then we erase Lovich on a caught stealing. And so you face the minimum there. Bottom of one, Bryce right back up the middle again. And Bryce is not your typical leadoff hitter. He's not a guy who can go up there and look at 7-8 pitches his first at bat. But Bryce does a great job coming back and kind of communicating to the team what everything looks like. Rashawn pops up to short. Jordan strikes out swinging. In the middle of all of this, Chance takes second, and the throw goes into center field, so he gets the third. Need a base hit here to get this run home, but Hines goes down swinging. Top of second, Pier grounds out to short. Garcia's walked. And then Cerna singles down the third baseline. Just kind of a crazy thing there. I mean, just, you know, good job of hitting. Kind of a slow bouncing ball. We're kind of shaded over there, but that's life. But rather than fold, Pico's like, don't worry, fellas, I got you. Curry goes down swinging, and then Culbertson goes down swinging. So, you know, really nice job overcoming some adversity there by Pico. All right, bottom of second, Larry walks, and why wouldn't you walk him on, Larry? Start giving him some more breaking balls right, you know, in fastball count, see if we can't get him a chase. But he walks, and then Kohler singles through the left side. Kohler has beaten the shift a little bit here as of late, and this is one of those opportunities where, you know, they're shifting right and he's hitting left. And really nice job of hitting there. That's a veteran guy. And all of a sudden, Powell walks. We got bases loaded and nobody out here. Really need to make some things happen. Pulliam, they ground the ball, can't get two, and Larry scores, makes it 1-0. Cup then strikes out looking. He starts at second base for you. Chance then doubles to left field. Again, nice weekend for Bryce Chance. And Kohler scores, makes it a 2-0 ball game. Rashawn comes up now with two men on. Gets open a 2-0 count, swing and miss, and then fouls several pitches off and then loses the AB on a swinging strikeout. And again, these are opportunities early, especially when you've got a team like Mizzou that really doesn't have a lot to play for. You know, you'd love to end your season on a winning note before you head off for summer baseball, but they had nothing, right? Nothing to deal with. And really needed to get some separation earlier in this ball game. All right, top of third, Stevens doubles down the line. Corona then strikes out swinging. Austin strikes out swinging. Lovage fouls out to the catcher. So, yeah, the double doesn't hurt you. Again, Pico, again, just kind of answering the bell there. Bottom of third. So it looks like initially DJ has beat this thing out. You know, and that's a tough race right there, having to get him down the line. But the pitcher does get there. They initially call him safe. They challenge it, and yeah, he did tag him. And really, I thought even in live action that he tagged him. And then Hines fouls out to the third baseman. Larry, again, suddenly hot, singles up the middle and still second. And then another situation here where Logan goes the other way. And it looks like it's going to leak through, but it doesn't. Nice play by the shortstop just to keep that ball in the infield. But here we go. Joe Powell's then hit by the pitch. The bases are loaded here. And Pulliam pops to the first base. Lengthy at bat there. But, man, this is a missed opportunity here. And this is not just about Ethan Pulliam. But, you know, we had so many opportunities here to get some separation. And these are the kinds of things that kind of you let teams like this hang around. They start to believe it's their day. Top of four, Pico walks Pier. And then Garcia is hit by the pitch. So Pico gives you three good innings. And then all of a sudden kind of starts a rally. And here's the deal. Everybody ends up scoring. Garcia, we get it's kind of a tough deal here, you know. It's a throwing error on the pitcher. We couldn't get it done. Cerna then hits the ground ball to short, and we boot it. Dave Marchand, rare mistake. And then Pierce scores. And then Curry's hit by the pitch to load the bases again. Culbertson then singles to left field. A run scores. And you bring in Gavin Black, and Black's able to get out of this thing without giving up anything. But again, you look at this, it's also self-inflicted, right? Walk, hit by pitch, and both of those guys end up scoring. An error, a hit by pitch. I mean, it's, you know, we just kind of had, as my friend Jamie Rappas used to say, Steve, they just had a come apart. We did. All this is on us. Every bit of this. But give Gavin Black a lot of credit for coming in there and kind of getting out of that thing. Gives up nothing. Gets a little soft liner to third, and then rolls up a double play ball, and State gets out of it in a tie ball game 2-2. And then you're thinking, okay, as bad as that inning went, it could have been a lot worse. We get out of there in a tie ball game. We're okay. Bottom of four, they bring in Lunsford. We knew at some point we'd see him. He's pitched extensively this year. Dylan Cupp singles through the left side, and then Chance grounds into a double play. Mershon reaches on a fielding error, goes around to second, and then DJ flies out to center field. So here we go again. They score, we don't answer. And that's what happens. That's how you start losing momentum in games. You go out there and roll up a big double play ball, the crowd's ignited, and then you post a zero, and everybody kind of sits down or decides to go get some popcorn. At top of five, Austin flies out to left. Lovitch grounds out to short. Pier then singles back up the middle, goes to second on a wild pitch, and Garcia grounds out to the first base. So Black, really good two innings for him. Bottom of five, Hines grounds out to first on an 0-2 count. We go into weather delay. Larry flies out to left, and Kohler strikes out swinging. It's tough, but you think, you know what? Hey, we're okay. We're okay. We're okay. We're okay. Top of six, Nate Dahm comes in. And Nate Chester comes in. We made some changes here defensively, for sure. Serna grounds out the third. Curry strikes out swinging. Culbertson strikes out swinging. And that's your Nate Dahm day. It's good to see 25 back out there on the mound. Bottom of six, Joe Powell auditioning for the role of hero once again. On an 0-2 count, hits a home run to left field. It's incredible what's happened to Joe Powell. Pulliam grounds to second. Chester strikes out looking. Bryce Chance with a big single through the right side here to keep it going. And Mershon singles to center field. So now all of a sudden, hey, got runners on our corners and DJ's up, and we ground out to third base. Hit the ball hard. Guy makes a nice play. But again, another opportunity to gain some separation there. Top of seventh, State has the lead. We bring in Tyson Harden, and we made a bunch of defensive changes. And I'll be honest with you, I thought it was too early. That was my feeling then. It's too early because these guys are going to have to hit. Chester's in the lineup. You bring in Michael O'Brien, who is a very gifted outfielder. But, you know, a tight ball game like this, you're going to need some guys that can score. Stevens grounds out to third. Corona strikes out swinging. Then Austin singles to left field. And then Lovitch, home under center field. And Michael O'Brien nearly makes this play. Actually goes off his glove. We just, you know, couldn't get it in. But off the bat, I said, this thing is trouble. And O'Brien nearly saves it. And, of course, Michael O'Brien's actually one of our better defenders in the outfield. That's why he comes in defensive replacement. We'll be having a much different conversation today. And it's not just about this kid making this catch, right? It's a tough play, right? Robbing a home run is not just something you, oh, well, we should have done that. But in this situation, it kind of proved to be the difference in winning and losing this inning. But we had plenty of opportunities. It never boils down to one pitch. Pier grounds out to third base. Bottom of seven, you think, okay, got some pretty hot hitters coming up here. Let's see if we can't make something happen. Hines pops up to second. Larry walks. And then Kohler, again, beating the shift, right? I don't understand what Amani's doing here, though. We talk about base running blunders. This is one of those ones that doesn't make a lot of sense here. Kohler singles to left. It goes to second on the throw. And then Larry is out at third base. Probably ran us out of a big inning there. Truly. And then Powell flies out to right field. So we talk about the home run, right? We didn't rob the home run. Well, then we give an out away right here with a runner in scoring position. And you never know how the pitch sequence changes. You never know. But again, we run ourselves out of an inning here. Top of eight, Garcia walks. Serna strikes out swinging. Curry, we get the ground ball to third, and we can't get two. And the crowd kind of got a little bit salty here. Because remember, Hines got called out on a BS call earlier in the weekend at second. Similar situation here. And I thought that Hines did a better job going direct with the base and not impeding. But fortunately, Culbertson strikes out looking. So bottom of eight, O'Brien fouls out to the third baseman on the first pitch. Now give Nate Chester some credit. Lengthy at bat here. Gets up 3-0 in the count. Next thing you know, it's a full count. He fouls off a couple 3-2 pitches. And then he doubles down the line and left. And this is when I thought, okay, we're okay. We're okay. Top of the order coming up here. And you've got the, number nine guy that comes up and gets you a double with less than two outs. You got the time running scoring position with less than two outs. You feel pretty good. Well, then what do you know? They hit Chance. Lunsford plunks Chance. Now you got two guys on. You don't need the big fly here. You just need a base hit. Mershon flies out to right on the first pitch. And then there's a wild pitch. And so now all of a sudden, not only is a tying run, but the go-ahead run is in scoring position with Dakota Jordan at the plate. And we strike out swinging. And this is what happens. This is what makes you forget Friday, game two. is moments like these, you know, when the crowd is on their feet and the team is up against it, this is where this team is different than, say, 2021. You know, because Tanner Allen, Rowdy Jordan would have found a way to get those runs in. They just would have. It would have to be a home run. Maybe it's a single to right field. Maybe it's a double in the gap. That's what this team is missing. And this is not, you know, an indictment on Dakota Jordan or Hunter Hines. But this team needs a clutch gene. I think guys like, you know, Brent Rooker, Jake Mangum, what made them great is they wanted to be in these moments, and then they came through. And so, again, we talk about one pitch, but there's a bunch of them in a 4-3 ball game. All right, top of nine, Tyler Davis comes in, gets Beeman to ground out. Corona walks. Austin Thinglesley to left side. You're thinking, okay, they're fixing to tack on here. But instead, we get the out at third, and we're able to get Pier to ground out a second. So we get out of that. So now, again, you go to the ninth, and we go 1-2-3, all K swinging. Hines goes down swinging. Larry's goes down swinging. Kohler goes down swinging. And I think in that situation, everybody's thinking big fly, right? But the reality of it is we lose, and we let this thing get away from us. We did. And it's not one play. I mean, you go back to that one inning when Pico kind of ran into some trouble, and then Dotson comes in and can't get him out. You know, that allowed them to kind of climb back into this ball game. But how many times did we have runners in scoring position and star players up, and we couldn't get a run home, right? I mean, that's just the reality of all of it. That's the reality of all of it. It's important to understand that. It's a team game. When you have guys on base with less than two outs, you got to find a way to get them home. And I understand it's easier said than done. But when you're playing for what we're playing for, and you begin to think, hey, if we sweep this series, that gives us 18 wins and keeps us in the teens in the RPI, headed into Hoover, you're in a much better situation. And we didn't come through. We did the bare minimum, right? We won two. You know, and that's the thing. You go back and look at this team over the course of the year. And that's one of the things that I think about in hindsight. You know, it's like when you have a team that has some measure of consistency on the weekends, you typically have good things. They're 36-19 overall, which is probably 40-plus. I think we all agree with that. But you go back and you think, you win the weekend against Air Force, and you lose one game by one run, you know, that middle game, and wasted a great pitching performance from Cal Steven. You win the weekend against Georgia Southern. Of course, you sweep the weekend against Mount St. Mary's. You sweep the weekend against Evansville, as you should. You take two out of three from LSU. You go to Texas A&M and you get one, again, which is the bare minimum. You got to avoid getting swept on the road, and we do. We go to Florida. Should have swept that series ourselves. We get one, our gaudiest win of the year, 12-2, against an SEC opponent. Georgia comes in here. Again, you do the bare minimum. You win the series. You're hoping to sweep, and we should have if the SEC Control Center would have let us. At Ole Miss, and as much as we hate it, you do the bare minimum. You get the win, and we should have won the series. We should have. We blew three late leads in that middle game. Should have won. But you did the bare minimum. Auburn comes in here. You're trying to make up a game somewhere. You got to win the series. We get a sweep. You go to Vanderbilt thinking we got to get one, right? And we get two. Alabama comes in. You got to win a series. We do. We probably should have swept. We didn't have a good Sunday pitching performance. You go to Arkansas and begin the year, everybody's like, man, if we can just get one. Well, that's what we do. We get one, and then we all walk away disappointed we didn't win the series. We should have. And, of course, you take two out of three from Missouri. And so you never had that bad weekend. Right, I mean, always losing to Ole Miss is bad, but you didn't have that weekend that just takes you out of contention. And I think that's one thing the committee has to look at. Mississippi State has consistently played good ball in their league the entire year. You haven't had this roller coaster of emotions, right? You hadn't had this, oh, well, they won this series and got swept the next. And we have consistently played well. We have not been swept the entire year. It's been a while since we could say that, to be quite honest with you. Yeah, it's true. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is our friend in the mortgage industry. Guys, it's a big decision. It truly is. Because if you go with the wrong person, you get put in a bad deal. You do. Because, like, if you have this whole agenda of just, guys, just get me in the house, I'll figure it out, that's not the way to go through life. Don't just get me in the house. Get me in a good deal. Don't put me in a situation where maybe I'm in a 327 arm and then my life changes and, you know, there's the wrong person running the Federal Reserve Board and next thing you know, interest rates are skyrocketing and then I can't afford to pay my mortgage. Yeah, it's true. You need to know somebody that can understand the nuances of that, and that's Burt Chandler. His phone number is 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. If you need it and can't remember it, just hit me up, DM me on Twitter or Facebook, and I'm happy to send it to you. Because Blair's my friend. Blair's done a great job for a long time for a lot of people. Been my friend for a long time, too. And so I don't do business with people that I don't trust. And I trust Blair Chandler, and you can trust him with your mortgage. There are not many decisions bigger in life than that. Maybe what you want to do with your soul eternally, maybe who you want to marry, if you want to be a parent, those are all maybe the only decisions more important than buying a home. Stick with the professional like Blair Chandler at closeatblair.com. All right, today's top 10 list brought to you by Blair Chandler. So again, looking for that game day condo, getting the house for the first time. You don't know who to call. Call Blair. Trust me. All right, so the Bulldogs need to keep winning. We had a 3-1 week last week, but it doesn't feel like it, right? I mean, you look up, we're 14-15 in the polls. Not currently projected to host, but it's very nip and tuck, and I'm going to get to that before we get out of here. I did all the research yesterday, wrote a couple articles about them. You can go read them over jeanspage.com for free, the Mississippi State affiliate for 247 Sports. Because the question is like, hey, Steve, are we hosting, and who are we rooting against? Well, I broke all that down for you yesterday because I love you. But we got to keep winning. It's as simple as that. If we lose Tuesday night against Ole Miss, we're not hosting. I'm just going to lay it out for you. It's as simple as that. Now, if we win, I still can't guarantee that we're hosting. We probably need to get one more and or some help, right? It's that close. It's that close. You win against Ole Miss, you put yourself in a good position, especially if some other people out there maybe drop a game early in their own conference tournaments. So there's about half a dozen teams vying for, you know, a couple spots there at the end. So it's important to kind of understand that. I broke it down for you. You'll know who you need to root for. I'm going to go over some of that before we get out of here. All right, number 10 on our list today, and our list is about winning. Now, give a shout-out. DJ Kawa didn't make our list because I'm doing rock songs today, but All I Do Is Win. That's a song that we all love. It's true. We've heard it a lot, maybe a little bit overplayed, but great song. So wanted to throw that out there. No disrespect to DJ Khaled. Another one. All I'll Do Is Win, your honorable mention. But number 10, a band that I didn't know anything about as I began to put this list together. One of the things that you'll learn, there's not a lot of rock songs out there about winning. You got to really work. We didn't put ABBA's The Winner Takes It All either. We didn't put that one. Not technically a rock song. But number 10, I stumbled across this band here, and I'm like, where have these guys been? They're a relatively new band. This particular song features Dean Castronova from Journey on drums. We'll talk about Journey a little bit later. But it's a band called Restless Spirits. Restless Spirits. And it's kind of 80s metal-ish with more of a modern twist to it. You know, it's a really super cool song. And it's called Live to Win by Restless Spirits. That's number 10. Now the rest of these bands you're all going to know. You're going to have ties to them anyway. Number 9, I don't care how we win. I just want us to win tomorrow night. I don't care if it's a mercy rolling. I don't care if it's a 1-0 ball game. I would prefer the mercy rolling. I like to be able to just kind of sit back and enjoy the ball game. But, you know, this midweek pitching thing, you know, you never know how it's going to go. But if we win ugly, it's still a win. And that's the song today, the Rolling Stones at number 9 with Winning Ugly. It's kind of got an 80s, kind of a new wave vibe in some respects. It's the Stones, but it's not the typical Keith Richards riffing on this one. Rolling Stones, Winning Ugly at number 9. Number 8, another song called Live to Win. That was also the title track of a solo album from the great Paul Stanley of Kiss. That's your number 8 song, Paul Stanley's Live to Win. And it's kind of modern, too. It doesn't really have the classic rock sound to it, or modern at the time, shall we say. Number 7, another band you know exceptionally well. It's Foreigner. From their album 4, that also had the great song Waiting for a Girl Like You. Yeah, it's true. It's I'm Gonna Win. It's a deeper cut from Foreigner, but it kind of fits our motif today. So your number 7 track is Foreigner's I'm Gonna Win. Number 6, off the EP Love is for Suckers, it's Twisted Sister with I Will Win. And I'll tell you this, if you've ever liked a Twisted Sister song, and many of you have, whether it be I Wanna Rock or We're Not Gonna Take It or Come Out and Play, this is another one that I think you're going to dig. It's a little more recent. You know, it's been recorded since the band reunited. It's I Will Win by Twisted Sister. That's your number 6 track today. Number 5, we mentioned Dean Castronova earlier. He also plays on this track. It's the first album with Arnel Pineda, one of Roy Sammonti's countrymen. It's Journey with What It Takes to Win, the first album. Elevation. Super, super cool song. It sounds a lot like Steve Perry, to be honest with you, which is one of the reasons they hired him in the first place. But classic Journey sound with more of a modern take. What It Takes to Win by Journey, number 5. Number 4. Now, this is a song that was kind of new to me. It's Bryan Adams, and it's got a little bit of a punk vibe to it. Kind of surprised me when I heard this one, but I really dig it. It's called We're Gonna Win. And songs like that should probably be a little more aggressive and rude and obnoxious and in your face. We're Gonna Win from Bryan Adams, number 4. And number 3, I absolutely love this album when it first came out. I saw the first video and I went out and bought the cassette tape the next day. I have it on cassette. I have it on CD. I've also got it downloaded to my phone. It's an album that I think is probably underappreciated by many. Because, the singer ended up having some injuries and some issues that kind of kept him from continuing the career. But it's the band Bonham, and the album was A Disregard of Timekeeping. Absolutely love that album from start to finish. That was a really good time in music, despite the fact that things were beginning to change. You know, grunge was just around the corner. But a band like Bonham came out. Of course, Jason Bonham, the son of legendary Led Zeppelin drummer John Bonham, Gonzo. Absolutely amazing, amazing musician. And again, the album is Disregard of Timekeeping. It is absolutely phenomenal. The whole way through, every song on there is great. Many of you know Wait For You. That was the big hit. But Guilty is my favorite track on there. But my third favorite track is your number 3 song today. It's Playing to Win from Bonham. Playing to Win from Bonham, number 3. Number 2, man, you know we had to have some hair metal in here somewhere. We do. And when the Rat Detonator album came out, I wasn't quite sure what to make it. The vocal was a little bit raspier. But the production value on this album is absolutely amazing. I know many of you, like, you had Out of the Cellar because it had Round and Round on it. You had Invasion of Your Privacy because it had Lay It Down and You're in Love and a few others. And then some of you kind of got off the Rat bandwagon. I did not. And I'm still on the Rat bandwagon. I have seen them play personally here in the last few years. And now just kind of Stephen Piercy out playing these days. I don't know what'll ever happen with that. But, you know, Rat at one point, like maybe in 85 when Invasion came out, Rat was probably the biggest band out there. Like Rat goes out on the Invasion of Your Privacy tour and they bring Bon Jovi with them that were kind of riding high on the 7,800 degrees Fahrenheit. I still haven't finished the Bon Jovi documentary. I've been busy writing. Man, I need to sit down tonight and finish that. But understood, this whole Rat thing, Rat maybe doesn't get enough respect. You know, they didn't write A Wanted Dead or Alive or A Home Sweet Home. And I do think they had some really good power ballads, but they just weren't as commercially successful as maybe some of their peers, right? But Rat was an amazing band from the Detonator album. And again, this is a great song to listen to in the car. It's Heads I Win, Tails You Lose. Yeah, great. Number 1, though, it's actually a cover song, which is going to kind of intro us into Wednesday's Top 10. I've already got that picked out. Kind of got inspired from this because I thought this was originally a Santana original. It's not. It's a cover of a Russ Ballard song. And Russ Ballard has written some of your favorite songs. And because of the fact he didn't have a great commercial career as a recording artist, you don't know his name, but you know his music, because so many people re-recorded his songs or he wrote songs for them that were massive hits. And that was the case here. It's Santana's Winning. Absolutely beautiful song in every aspect. The vocals great. Santana's guitar play is always great. Super, super great song. So there you go. We got to keep winning. Here's 10 songs to hopefully keep us on track. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to find our boy Roy Samanti. I met Roy's college roommate. I've met him before, but I saw him Saturday. And a lady was with them. Very, very tall, athletic, attractive lady. Came up and said, hey, I'm a big fan of the show. And most of our listeners are of the same variety. Very athletic, very attractive. That's male or female, or whatever you choose to call yourself these days. But Boneyard listeners, not only are the best informed Mississippi State fans, but the best looking Mississippi State fans. It's true. And Kim said hello. And Roy's a great guy. And they're tickled that Roy has become kind of a pseudo celebrity because of the show. But Roy's a great guy. Roy is my friend. Roy is your friend because he does all this for you because he loves you. He loved the top 10 list and said, hey, you know, I can put these things on Spotify for you. I'm like, cool, knock yourself out. And little did I know, I was going to make a friend. But Roy is my buddy, and I appreciate his contributions to the show. You can find him on Twitter and on Spotify under the handle Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And, of course, I do tweet out the links. But if you'd like to cruise around and listen to some tunes that maybe you're not as familiar with, we can assist you with that. You know those long trips? You know how it is, you get tired of picking songs, and, like, you listen to SiriusXM Octane, and after like an hour and a half, it starts repeating. You're like, I just heard this song. You know, it gets stale after a while. So we're adding some fresh variety to your life with the Top 10 List. Thanks, as always, for your support of the Top 10 List. Please let us know if you have suggestions, comments, complaints, or any dirty jokes. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, I love Campus Bookmart, and I have for a long time, because I can get what I want there. And what do I want? In addition to brand new rock music, I want more Mississippi State merchandise. I can't have enough Mississippi State merch. It's always the best gift, right? If you want to be the favorite aunt or uncle, when birthdays come around, everybody else is going to buy something else. You buy some Mississippi State merch. You're going to put a smile on their faces. It's true. Buy something for yourself while you're there. Mom, we're going to be taking a trip this year. You know, Mom, you and Dad have been planning a vacation. You always want to have a couple new outfits. Yeah, it's true. You want the kids to have some fresh clothes to wear on vacation. It's true. Go to campusbookmart.net. They can get you hooked up. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you Phrase That Pays. That's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. CampusBookmart.net. They've got everything you need to outfit your fan cave, your home, your RV, so many great things. Be sure and check in with them today. All right, a little housekeeping stuff before we get into our next segment. Chris Jans finally signed an extension with Mississippi State. That's something, listen, we weren't especially worried about it, right? But the reality of it is, you know, we're glad to get it done. We've got a piece out there for sure that, you know, you can kind of go read about it. But I believe Pete Thamel broke the news. It was something we've been expecting for a while. But glad to get it done. Glad to get it done. Let me see if I can't. Here's the release right here. Here is the release from, there's not the release. They link the release, but there is no release. Nevertheless, it's done. He goes from 3.2 mil per year up to 4.2. I think we all agree we're headed in the right direction with men's basketball. Everybody, I think, would agree with that. They've been a lot much funner team to watch. We can't wait to get back on the court this year with Josh Huppert. And, of course, some recent commitments, too. You know, Riley Kugel, former Mississippi State commitment, back in the fold now through the transfer portal. So Happy to see what Chris is putting together, but more importantly, just happy that the ride continues. Mississippi State softball ended their NCAA tournament on the road at Stanford. We knew it was kind of a tough draw, but we go out there. We do take down Cal State 4th, and in one game, a team that we had played earlier this year, get into the winner's bracket game and then lose to Stanford. It was a game for a while, but then it kind of got away from us. The next thing you know, we're in a loser leaves town match, and unfortunately it was us. But congratulations to Coach Ricketts and everybody involved with Bulldog softball that really turned things around this year. Be interesting to see kind of what happens there, for sure. But we enjoy winning around here. Last I checked, Mississippi State women's golf still in the hunt out of the national championships. I don't know how things went yesterday, but I guess we were 12 in 12th place late. But great opportunity. And, of course, men's tennis individuals going on now, national championships. And in the latest information that we have, Dakota Jordan wins the 2024 Ferris Trophy. Very happy for DJ. Nice to get that done as we get prepared to head over to Hoover. But, pretty nice. And as the award goes back to Mississippi State, he's the eighth Mississippi State player to win it. I don't understand this line. It says Jordan is the eighth Mississippi State player to earn the award, and it's the ninth time an MSU player has won the honor. Did somebody win it and not earn it? I don't know. But the bottom line is that he's won it, and currently seventh in the SEC with a .363 batting average, got 17 bombs, 61 RBI. And if he hits just two more, he will move into the top 10 single season record charts. How about that? Pretty impressive. But congratulations to him, because we've got some big things in front of us. No question about that. Let's take a look back at the weekend it was in the Southeastern Conference. And we needed some help. We got a little help. Right? But it's one of those deals, too, where we didn't take care of everything we needed to take care of. True, right? I mean, it is what it is. If we had swept, we'd feel a whole lot better about life. But the reality of it is, hey, we're continuing to play baseball. Let's look back at the weekend. Ole Miss goes down to LSU and gets swept. We expected LSU to win that series, thought Ole Miss may take one. But it's really not of consequence to us, except for the fact that it could help us in the RPI with LSU kind of getting hot a little bit. I'll explain that a little bit more in our final segment. Florida goes to Georgia and takes 2 out of 3. Now, we talked about this 2 weeks ago. In order for State to be the 5, we figured that Georgia would be 2-1 against South Carolina and then maybe 2-1 against Florida. Well, they end up sweeping South Carolina, which really kind of put us in a precarious spot. But the Gators come through for us. Thank you, Scott Strickland. The Gators come through, hoping you come through for us next week too. And Florida takes 2 of 3, which sets up a tie between State and Georgia. Of course, if we had beat Missouri, we wouldn't have needed that. We'd be in 5th place alone and outright. But we do get the tiebreaker due to the head-to-head matchup. South Carolina swept for the second consecutive week. It's brutal, man, this time of year. I told you guys at the beginning of the year, I just wasn't sold on the South Carolina team, and they kind of got fat on playing some of the lesser mediocre teams in the league, but really, really tough ending to the year. Vanderbilt drops 2 of 3 to Kentucky. Kentucky, your SEC champions now. Alabama goes on the road to Auburn. Auburn wins games 1 and 2. Auburn in that second game was up 12-2 and had to hang on and win 12-11. And then in the final game, Alabama wins. It was a lengthy game, but congratulations to Butch Thompson and the Auburn Tigers winning their last two series. Of course, they're out of it, but kind of ended up riding the ship a little bit too. Of course, Missouri goes to State, loses 2 out of 3. Arkansas takes 1 from A&M to basically take the West. And so that's how the weekend was. So what does it all mean, Steve? Well, that's a good question. We'll go back now and look at the standings. The final regular season standings. So the championships have all kind of been handed out now. Kentucky and Tennessee share the SEC championship because they both end the year with a 22-8 record. And, of course, Tennessee, it's kind of lying in the reeds here. We talked about that about 3 weeks ago. Don't be surprised if Tennessee kind of sneaks in late. The schedule a little more favorable for them down the stretch, and they did. But in the East, Tennessee and Kentucky tied 22-8. Just behind them, Georgia 17-13, Vanderbilt 13-17, South Carolina 13-17, Florida 13-17. I mean, there's a host of 13-17 teams, and of course Missouri 9-21. Arkansas 20-10 wins the West. One game back is A&M at 19-11. Mississippi State 3 games back at 17-13. LSU 13-17, Alabama 13-17, Ole Miss 11-19, Auburn 8-22. So Auburn is your last place team. Missouri 13th, and your Ole Miss Rebels 12th. And it's like, again, I read these comments out there. What is Ole Miss? Guys, Ole Miss is not going to the tournament. Stop talking about it. It's not happening. Unless they win the SEC tournament, they have absolutely no chance of getting picked as an at-large bid. It is not going to happen. Period. Not going to happen. And really, the chore, if you're Scott Strickland, is you really have two, right? You have two things that you got to find a way to get 6 host spots, because Mississippi State and Georgia are both deserving. Now, Georgia has a higher RPI. They're going to get it, right? And it's Scott's job to get Mississippi State in. You say, but Steve, he's the AD in Florida. No, he is the SEC representative on the D1 baseball committee. It is his job to get Mississippi State in. You can have 6 hosting spots for the SEC. You can have 6 for the ACC. That's the top conferences. Maybe throw a couple to the Big 12 and throw a couple out west. You could do that. But there's a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about that in the final segment. But I think outside of that, that's job one. Get 6 hosting spots for the SEC. But what do you do with all these 13-17 teams? And there are a bunch of them there, right? You start thinking, okay, well, how do I begin to differentiate between the 13-17 teams? There are 5 of them. Now, if we look at RPI as it stands today, and that's always a chore, right? Because it's not just RPI, it's KPI as well. This is the first year we've done that. But you look at Ole Miss, even 32 in the RPI, 11-19. So State wins that one. Not going to help a whole lot, not going to hurt, but we got to win that game. But you start breaking this thing down in the SEC, you say, okay, I've got Alabama with an 18 RPI at 13-17. So of the 13-17 teams, I think they're in. South Carolina, their situation a little more difficult. They're 13-17, have the same number of overall wins as Alabama, 33-21, nearly one spot behind them. However, the last 10 have been brutal. Brutal. But I think they're in, because you've got to look at the whole body of work. So that's 2. Then you've got Florida, Scott's team with the number one strength of schedule. They're again 28-26, but 13-17. Does Florida deserve to get in? I think Florida is a team, especially with the pitching they have, and you got a star player like Caglione. They're a team that could go in as a number 2 or 3, probably a 3, and really cause some havoc. And let's be honest, a 2 and 3 is basically the same thing, because you play head to head, you win that game, and you're playing the 1, right? I think Florida's in. Then you've got Vanderbilt at 27. Now things get a little bit dicey, right? Because you start thinking, okay, well, if I get all those teams in, what about LSU, who has a 30 RPI? Are they going to let us have all those spots? That's a real question mark. And who do you leave out? That's why you need the SEC tournament to kind of give Scott a little cover here. Like, okay, so if Georgia beats LSU tomorrow, which is something we really don't want to happen, and I'll explain that here shortly. But if Georgia beats LSU, then you don't have to worry about them, and you can probably get the rest figured out. Vanderbilt, if they lose tomorrow, I think you can say, okay, well, we're done there. Because if Alabama beats Vanderbilt, you're good. But here's the deal. Our interests are better served by LSU beating Georgia. You say, but Steve, why is that? Well, we own two wins over both teams. The two wins against Georgia are considered quad one wins. The two against LSU are quad two. Because of the fact they're not a top 25 RPI team, we beat them at home. So 1 through 25 is a quad one win. If LSU beats Georgia and Georgia is then eliminated, those two wins from Georgia will remain top 25 wins in the RPI. If LSU wins that, then LSU probably moves into the top 25. You would expect that, right, with Georgia's RPI being what it is. So now all of a sudden, you got a couple more quad one wins. And, of course, you need LSU to continue winning to remain top 25. Now, Vanderbilt is already included. I misstated yesterday that Vanderbilt wasn't quad one wins. They are because of the fact those are road wins. And road wins 1 through 60 are considered quad one. So even if Vanderbilt loses tomorrow, they're going to remain a quad one. Those two wins over Vanderbilt remain. So you want their RPI to get as high as it can get. True, but those already count. And so our rooting interests tomorrow really are for the teams that are not like LSU, that's not quad one. Vanderbilt is. And again, I kind of mentioned that yesterday in my article. But yeah, those already count. And so really, when you start breaking the bracket down and start looking at all this, you start to think, okay, Steve, what's best for us? Not what's best for the SEC, what's best for Mississippi State. Now, of course, it's a little different dynamic for for Scott Strickland. He's got to do what's best for the SEC. But by doing what's best for the SEC, he's doing what's best for Mississippi State. So tomorrow, as the games open, here is who we really want to win. LSU and Georgia has the first game. We need LSU to win to become top 25 in the RPI. So all of a sudden, Mississippi State's RPI gets better without even playing a game because you pick up two more quad one wins. As it stands right now, Mississippi State has, let me look here, 12. We're 12-11 against quad one. If LSU becomes quads, then all of a sudden you're 14-11. And you know what's interesting about that too, that makes you among the tops in the country. And of course, there's some teams at the top of this chart like A&M and Arkansas that also own a couple of wins over LSU. So you're not gonna catch them. But because of the fact their RPI gets even higher, it pulls you with them. So we need LSU to beat Georgia. Alabama and South Carolina play game number two. We didn't play South Carolina, so we don't really care what happens to them. However, we know that Alabama's not gonna host. But Alabama's a top 25 RPI. If they lose tomorrow, there's a potential they could drop out. I don't think that's the case because of the fact that South Carolina's RPI is right there, perfectly aligned with theirs. But since the South Carolina win does not help us, we really want Alabama to win that game. And Alabama will then maybe move up another spot in the RPI, and South Carolina would fall behind us, again, which carries us forward. Vanderbilt plays Florida. And again, you've got two wins already over Vanderbilt, counting the quad one. Florida, at this point, is still kind of hovering around there. And you start thinking about this. And so my mind, in some respects, has kind of been changed here. Florida is now a quad one win. It's not reflected, though, which is interesting. They haven't changed that. But Florida now 24 in the RPI. Since Vanderbilt is going to remain a quad one, even if they lose tomorrow, it's probably better for Florida to win. Because the higher their RPI goes, the better we are. We could really get a net change either way with Vanderbilt or Florida. So we don't have a serious rooting interest in that game. But because we have those two wins over Vandy, they're going to remain quad ones. We're kind of fine whatever happens to them. But Florida moving up in the RPI would help us. And Vandy moving up in the RPI would help us. So it's kind of one way or another. And so then we need to beat Ole Miss. So when you think about tomorrow, when you wake up, put the games on, we're cheering for Mississippi State in every game. And for the most part, we have games that could positively impact our RPI. We really don't have any negative that could hurt our RPI. unless South Carolina beats Alabama. That could be a minor adjustment. So, again, we want LSU, Alabama, and probably Florida, but I think it's just a negligible difference there. And, of course, Mississippi State. And that's the thing, too, when you start thinking about LSU, right? We didn't play Kentucky. So let's say LSU beats Georgia. Okay, great. Again, that moves LSU in the quad one. LSU's second round game is against Kentucky. So if LSU beats Kentucky, then they take a big jump in the RPI, which also means they're probably going to be in the tournament. They'll be one of those 13 and 17 teams that probably gets in on the strength of RPI. And so we can kind of ride LSU. And to be honest with you, we wouldn't play LSU into the championship game. So in many respects, it's almost in Mississippi State's best interest if LSU makes a real run at this thing. The more games they win, the better it is for Mississippi State. Again, because we have two wins over them at home. So you start rooting for them. Now, you get a little bit deeper here. Arkansas. We got a win over Arkansas. It's on the road. It counts in the quad one. And so Alabama's going to play. Excuse me. If Alabama beats South Carolina, they would play Arkansas. Well, then, of course, then your rooting interest is going to be Alabama. Because, again, Arkansas is going to remain where they are. But it would bolster Alabama's RPI, which in turn would kind of pull us with them. Now, in the bottom half of the bracket, Tennessee, we didn't play them. And so whoever wins between Vanderbilt and Florida, if they can find a way to beat Tennessee, well, that's who you're cheering for. And, of course, you cheer for State against Texas A&M. And so it's kind of a convoluted thing, but basically every game matters. And every game could potentially help us because we talk about RPI, how important RPI is, and we don't know how much weight this committee is going to put into that. But the reality of it is that we need some help around the league to improve our standing. The current D1 baseball rankings, our projections, have us as the number one 2 seed, has us going to Terre Haute, Indiana against Indiana State. Now, I want to host a regional here, but if we have to go on the road, that's a peach of a regional right there. They'd have Indiana State as the one, us as the two, Kansas State is a 3, and then Bowling Green is a 4. I think we win that. That's paired up with A&M. And then you see what happens after that, right? But, again, so I just wanted your rooting interest to be told there. Now, we're going to talk about what that means around the country next, after we talk about the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, if you bring a large group to town, whether it be for a ball game weekend, a work trip, or maybe just a chance to kind of get away, like this summer, you know, like before you go back to school, you want to get everybody together. Maybe you get all the aunts and uncles and the cousins and everybody under one roof, and everybody can just kind of cook some hamburgers on the grill and have a good time. Instead of you going out and getting, you know, a hotel or paying too much, once you come to Starkville, you love Starkville, and usually the only time you're here is to ball game weekend. It's usually pretty busy, and maybe your favorite restaurants are a little more difficult to get into, right? Once you come up here when it's a little quiet, students are out of town for the most part, and you come up here and stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page will come up, and you can peruse the amenities that are available to you right there on their Facebook. And it's also going to be some booking options that come up, Airbnb, VRBO, and the Evolve website. Now, you may have some points with some other vendors. I don't know. But if you're looking to save some money, I can do that for you. Book the Stark Vegas Clubhouse through the Evolve website. And if you use promo code BSR10, yeah, beautiful Steve Robertson 10, the number 10, that gets you 10% off your stay. Just by listening to this show, how cool is that? The people that own this place and run this place, all Mississippi State people, so we're kind of keeping the money in the family. But you guys love the greater Starkville area, and sometimes it's fun just to kind of come up here and do some shopping, kind of get away, and just have everybody together under one roof, right? Whether it's a work group, a friend group, a family group, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse is the place for you. Okay, now let's take a look. Early conference tournament results are going to be important to watch, right? That's a huge, huge, huge part of all of this. And so I share that with you because we know what's going to happen in the SEC, right? We're pretty abreast of what everything that happens there. We don't really care what happens in the ACC tournament with North Carolina. We don't care, right? And so North Carolina, they do it a little different out there. It's a pool play type thing. So the first game, May 21st, tomorrow, the first day of games, because it's all seeded by pools. It's kind of convoluted, and like the winners of pool play go to the semifinals. So you win your pool, you continue playing. And you never know with, you know, with us having, you know, 38,000 members in our conference now, maybe we go to something similar. But the game to watch tomorrow is Virginia Tech and Duke. Now, Duke, I don't think Duke can host over us. I kind of spelled that out yesterday, but I'd like to have a little breathing room, right? So Virginia Tech, that's your rooting interest tomorrow in the ACC tournament. It's going to be tough, but if Tech can find a way to beat Duke, I think it pretty much removes Duke from consideration. I really do. And again, everybody's going to play pool games here, right? And so everybody's going to get a minimum of two games in their pool. Now, May 22nd, the next day, Virginia, who is a team that I think is in, is going to play Georgia Tech. We want to root against them. Now, Wake Forest, a lot of people thought they were potential national championship contenders. They are now 15-15 in the ACC. They are not going to host, barring maybe a run to this tournament here. And I think even then you'd probably have to have some upsets that really knock some people down. We do not expect the committee is very reluctant to give a 500 team in their conference a regional host. I don't think Wake Forest is a real threat. I believe that. But we want to cheer against our contemporaries. NC State is a team that I think has passed us in the projections and in my own personal projections. They won't play until May 22nd, which is Wednesday, against Virginia Tech. So we'd love for Virginia Tech to just get hot here and run some interference for us. Duke is going to play NC State on May 23rd. And at that point, I think Duke is probably out. Of course, you'd love for NC State to just go 0 for the tournament. I just don't think it's going to happen. They're playing good baseball right now. North Carolina is the sixth RPI team or fifth RPI team. They're going to play on May 23rd against Pitt. So we're not going to catch them, but we want them to kind of pick off people around us. That's what we want. And, of course, Wake's going to play North Carolina. But everybody gets two games, and so we want everybody around us. We want Duke and NC State and Virginia, we want those teams to lose. And we're not going to get all of them to lose, but we're going to root against them nonetheless. That's an important tournament to watch. You know, I think it, as it stands today, North Carolina, who is the four RPI team, and then Clemson and Florida State, I think all three of those are absolutely safe. There's no way you catch them. Virginia's got 40 wins. It's going to be tough to catch them, right? But NC State's 32-19. They have a strength of schedule of four. But if they drop a couple of games here, then that could be a good thing for Mississippi State. I think State then probably passes them in the RPI. And it's not going to be solely just based on RPI, but that's the most obvious indicator right there. It certainly is. Now, we begin to look at the the Big 12 tournament here, and we'll just kind of scoot around here. Now, Oklahoma has won the Big 12. They are going to host. And as I was told two years ago, they got hot late and still ended up having to go on the road. So that's going to be a different dynamic too, right? I think that's a part of it. We owe those guys. Now, they ended up playing for a national championship, and they didn't come through for us, clowns. But that's part of the deal, right? Now, so Oklahoma and Oklahoma State both have a bye. And so Kansas and Kansas State, of course, projected in our regional. They'll play first in TCU and West Virginia, Central Florida, Cincinnati, Texas Tech, and Texas. None of that matters to us. But you really want somebody, you'd love to see somebody take down Oklahoma State. You'd love to see that happen. You don't know when that's going to be, but they're going to play Wednesday night. I know many of you will be watching SEC tournament, but that's something to consider too. That's a game to kind of watch as it scrolls across. You're not going to catch Oklahoma, but Oklahoma State is base of your contemporary right there. And so you want to be able to you want to win, and you want to see those guys lose. Now, another team that I think that we're in the mix with is ECU. It's going to be interesting to see kind of how this whole thing kind of breaks loose here because of the fact that how many mid-major teams are going to be given a hosting opportunity. Well, Indiana State, I think, certainly, and UC Santa Barbara, who has been red hot here as of late, despite the fact they're going to take a big tumble in the RPI next week, this weekend, because they don't have a conference tournament out there at the West Coast Conference, but they're going to play three consecutive games against a team that's got nearly a 300 RPI. But I feel pretty confident you're going to have at least two mid-majors. East Carolina is right in there with them, but East Carolina is about to drop two. How much, though? That's the thing you consider. And to be honest with you, I think we coddle these minor conferences too much. And that's what they are, they're minor conferences. You said, but you can't hold them responsible for their league. Well, I can hold them responsible for their non-conference scheduling. I can certainly do that. Now, Rice, remember when Rice used to be great? They were part of the NBA, the need-based aid group. You know, Tulane was in that. They got off of it. Of course, Vanderbilt still did it. But Rice is the 8 seed versus East Carolina. You would love for Rice to take out East Carolina. You would absolutely love for that to happen. I don't know that it's going to happen. I don't expect it to happen. But if somehow somebody other than East Carolina can win this tournament, that is a really good thing for Mississippi State. Now, we talk about the non-conference scheduling, right? Now, give them some credit. They won a series against North Carolina in they kind of moved it around. It was like Chapel Hill one day, Fayetteville the next, Greenville the next. And so they played kind of all over the state, and they win that series. That is a very, very significant series. They also played Campbell and lost to Campbell. But they open up with a Ryder. They played Old Dominion. They did get invited to this Keith LeClair Classic deal. And those are usually RPI builders. This one was not. The best RPI team was Purdue at 79. And then they played Cal State Fullerton. Can you believe how far the Titans have fallen? 16 and 35 with an RPI of 240. And then they played Southeastern Louisiana, who was a 500 club. So, yeah, you go play in this thing, but there's no value in it. None whatsoever. They end up having some winter weather to cost them BCU. And then they sweep Liberty. Liberty's got an RPI of 128 and 22 and 32. It's nuts. Now, UNC Wilmington, a very solid mid-major. They go there. They win on the road there. That's a very smart and savvy move. And then they have Columbia come in with an RPI of 123. They go to Elon, another in-state school, 174. They go to Texas San Antonio, RPI of 107. And then you get it, and that's a conference play deal there. But my point is like, yes, you can't really criticize them for the league in which they play in, but you can criticize them for not beefing up a non-conference schedule. Now, they did play a midweek against Duke, and they lost that game. And then they get swept by Tulane. They cancel a game against Campbell. And that's an interesting thing to discuss, too. If you have two teams who are similarly situated, Mississippi State and Campbell, I mean, in Eastern Carolina. We played our game against North Alabama, and it cost us a couple of spots in the RPI. And, of course, their RPI was much worse than Campbell. Campbell's 84. But ECU canceled the game with Campbell. We played. So if you send out a directive telling people don't cancel these games, that's got to be an issue. Or your words mean nothing. It's like, don't cancel the games. We're going to be paying attention to this. ECU cancels, Mississippi State played. Mississippi State won the game and absorbed the RPI hit. East Carolina didn't. And not to mention, let's factor in the fact they had lost four games in a row. And so they're thinking, we can't afford to take another L, so we need to save all our pitching for the weekend. So they cancel the game. They shouldn't be rewarded for that. So ECU shouldn't be in over Mississippi State. Absolutely not. But they might be. I'm open to that possibility. That's a thing that I think about every bit of this. It all means something to me. So we're rooting against all of our contemporaries, and I will update you every night on kind of how things went and who we're cheering for tomorrow. I'll have an article each and every night about that as you get ready for how each game could impact us and what games we're watching. It's that close. We'd love not to be in this position, but we are. Hey, if you haven't done so, go to truerest.com. And we've had a lot of Boneyard listeners, and it's been so nice to meet you all, right? There have been some that you can select, how did you hear about True Rest, on your form, and you get to pick the Boneyard, which is cool. I don't make anything from that, but it's nice to track that. We had a lot of Boneyard listeners that have come, and it's been such a joy to have a chance to kind of sit and talk with you. If you've got chronic pain or stress or anxiety in your life, we may have a solution, and things are going exceptionally well, but I tell you this, we've got room for you. We've got some student athletes, some names you know, I won't break their anonymity, that have been coming and floating with us and having some great results. Whether you're in town for a good time or in town for a long time, we can accommodate you. Phone number is 662-268-7601. And as always, too, if you hadn't been to WindtheBottomFalls.com, and I had some people stop me this weekend during the rain delay and say, Steve, I just read the book, I'm reading the book, and I appreciate that so much. All of my When the Bottom Falls and all of my sports titles are available at WindtheBottomFalls.com. And here in a few days, we'll be opening up the opportunity for you to pre-order The Dude. When I hang up with you guys, that's what I'll be working on. You know, I'm trying to get this thing completely roughed out by the end of May. We'll spend the month of June going through edits and rewrites and things of that nature. And then the book hopefully will go off to print in July. We'll have it back in late August, early September. So we're getting there. We're getting there. If you hadn't done so, come be a member. What is jeanspage.com, the Mississippi State affiliate for 247 Sports. We cover the team all the time, not just when they're here. When the team leaves, we do too. And we believe we provide the best, most comprehensive coverage Mississippi State has ever known. We'd love for you to come be a part of our family over at jeanspage.com. It's also a great Father's Day gift idea, too. All right, let's get out of here. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.